It's June 18th, 1997, and this is an evening talk by Lillian Van Voorhis about the Ascended Masters. Whoops, you got to turn the sound down. Forget when I have a microphone, I don't need to have that up. Oh, well, you'll just have to bear with me tonight. Well, gosh, I have a lot of material that I want to share with you, and it's another situation kind of like Kundalini, where to pull it all out and bring it into focus was a real interesting exercise. I didn't have as much time as I thought, but I'm just going to go for it. I think all of you know, because we're all really on the path. If you hear noises, by the way, that's Bert back there. The fan on our air conditioner or something just runs all the time without stopping, and I don't want to burn the motor out, so he's trying to figure that out. Because all of us are on the path, I know that we're all aware that throughout recorded history there have always been great beings, whether you think of them as saints or masters, philosophers, the blessed ones, great teachers, whatever it might be. There have always been a wonderful group of beings on the planet that really take it upon themselves to lift and encourage the rest of us through the story of their life or their personal actions or what they teach. Or just in their field, how they are on the earth. And beyond that, there are a very select few that go through all of the initiations necessary in this realm of existence, and they do become an ascended master. And they are very committed to those of us who are here and to our evolution, not just of the human kingdom, but of all kingdoms on the entire planet. And some of them have made an extremely deep commitment such that they won't leave, even regardless of what occurs. They are committed to work with us and with our planetary system until everything has ascended. So it's an incredible commitment beyond our comprehension, I think. When I touch into that, I just can hardly even imagine it, because we're talking in time as we think of it, millions of years for some of these beings. There are at least two masters. I think one, we don't even know his name, he's just called the Master R, and there's another one, I think Jupiter, who are very ancient, and they really have been on the planet in the ethereal form, not in the body, since the decision was made to help the evolution of this entire system. So it's a very long-lasting and deep, deep commitment. So. It always, when I see people who are depressed or who are struggling so in their life, sometimes I just want to blurt out that surrounding them are so many beings working with them. If you could only work with your own mind and your own emotions and lift yourself the least little bit, the doorway is open for incredible inspiration and intuition, insight, whatever. It's an amazing commitment that they've made to us. One of the things that I did when I was trying to make up these notes is I pulled out a couple of old Alice Bailey books that I have. She has wonderful phrases for the Ascended Masters, and one of the ones I like the best is that they are custodians of the plan, and divine will, and our elder brothers. I think Edgar Casey always spoke of Jesus as our elder brother, and I've always liked that because it brings it into a situation that I can really identify with. And the truth is that these great beings who are active now really have, most of them, taken incarnations many times over in this planetary system. And so they know. They really know what we experience, what we're going through, what the pitfalls and the hardships are, and what the joys are here as well. When the whole idea moved into focus and this Earth began to be a place that could bear life, a decision was made that there would be help for the evolution of the life form known as humanity and all the kingdoms. And that really happened in everything I've ever come across. It's always the number 18 million or 18,500,000 years ago. It's a vast length of time, the way we think of time, very, very long ago. And I think the way I think of these beings is that they are really the heart of God or the heart of the Creator working on a daily basis for us. Some of them are in body at this time on the planet, and we'll talk some about that. But when the decision was really made to bring in the truth or to tell and teach the secret doctrine, that's when things focused. And that all really happened in the early times on Atlantis, long before Atlantis kind of lost its focus in the light, and the teachings became profaned in some cases, and the teachings were then safeguarded and taken into Egypt for the most part. I'll probably touch on that a little bit, but I talked about that quite a bit when we talked about the mystery schools. One thing that's exciting to me now is that when I go back and look at history, when you have the turning of a century, there's always been a great upsurgence or resurgence of spirituality or a release of new teachings, what we think of as new teachings, or some kind of revelation. And in the 19th century, you had HPV, Helena P. Blavatsky, who I think in 1875 really began to focus and write all of the stuff that she had experienced in the Far East. She really got into Sanskrit and the Tibetan teachings, the Buddhist teachings, a lot of the very ancient work. Her work is pretty hard for us to sort through because she does use that terminology a lot. But she was really the first person in the Western world that introduced the idea of the Ascended Masters, what their work is, who they are, and she really had interaction. As far as I know, anyway, there's a lot of talk about some of it wasn't what she said it was, but I don't have absolute proof of that. I don't really know. And when I sense into the work, especially, I think it's called Isis Unveiled or something like that, it's quite profound. And it's really in alignment with anything I've ever read from the Eastern work. And then a little bit later in the early 1900s, you have Alice Bailey, who worked with a master, Jwal Kool, and he works with one of the major ones we're going to talk about tonight. But she became his amanuensis, and I can't even imagine sitting and taking the vast amounts of dictation that this woman brought through. I mean, her books in paperback are like this, Bible thin pages, and it's also hard to read. It's very mental. He's a very intellectual master, and very clear thinking. So you can get the concepts, but there's a lot of other things also embroidered all around it. So it's a lot of work to sort through it. The other person I can think of that really acted as an amanuensis for someone is Helena Rorick. And she also took dictation for one of the masters. She was, I'm not sure if she was Russian, but she did visit a lot of the countries in the Far East and in the Russian provinces. And I think El Morya eventually sat down with her and she received information. Her work isn't as vast as Blavatsky's or Bailey's, but it's equally valuable. And it's a lot easier to read. So kind of hard to find these days, but if I had time, I was going to get on the internet and fool around and see if I could find anybody that had this stuff in an easy format, but I didn't have the time with the company and stuff. Okay. The information that we're going to talk about tonight, I believe, was really given in the mystery schools. I think at some level, probably in the early initiatory levels, you were really taught the plan of evolution or how it is that we came to be here, where we came from, all of those kinds of things. And I think these are some of the pieces of information that became profaned as evolution progressed and men decided to organize and have their power the way they wanted it. And so it became a really hidden teaching. And I think it was really pretty much lost for the masses until Blavatsky published, and Alice Bailey as well. Okay, what I had hoped to do was work up a little chart. I might still do this. I'm only going to deal with a portion of this. But I had hoped to create a little chart to kind of show you how this all works. But we can start at the bottom and go up. And what I will focus on are the seven masters that we really know about. But I'm also going to talk a bit about the three great beings that are in charge of the three departments of the spiritual government, or the inner teachings, the inner world, as we know it. So at the bottom of things, of course, you have plants, animals, and minerals, those three kingdoms. And above that, you have humanity. And of course, at the bottom of humanity, we have those of us that are really asleep and unconscious and just wanting to exist and not grow or anything. Beyond that, you have the ability as a human being to go through six levels of initiation. And to be an ascended master, you have to have passed the sixth initiation. And there are, I believe, in the temples in Egypt, I'm sure you could go through the fourth and fifth. I think the sixth is taken out of body on the higher levels. If any of you know, you could add to my knowledge about this, but that's my belief. If you're interested in the levels, I read somewhere, disciple, initiate, arhat, adept, and then the sixth is the ascended master. There are two levels that are kind of done pretty close together, and I'm sure that most of us have done at least those first two levels. Often if you have dreams where you are in a temple with other people or there is a great being with you, if you have any memories like that, it's a clear indication that some kind of an initiatory process occurred. And at the Wesak festival in particular, but there are other festivals during the year, particularly winter solstice, and I think a couple of the other full moons in the spring or summer months, there are periods of time when initiation occurs. But the one we know most about is Wesak in the Himalayas and other places in the world where that is celebrated. You go there really in your astral form. Most of us don't go there in our physical form, but you're present out of body. And all right, so above the six initiations then, we have a group of seven masters who are also called Chohans, which is a simple word that just means Lord or great teacher. They are commonly called Chohans or Lords. And those seven are El Morya, Kuthumi, Serapis Bey, Paul the Venetian, Hilarion, Jesus, and Saint Germain. I'm sure all of you are familiar with some of them. Little is known about a few of them, so some of them are, they're very present, but their work is so intensive that they do not have students and they don't teach per se, while others have masses, millions and millions of students that they work with. Under each one of these, there's another whole series of levels. So they bring in a certain energy and they disseminate that through their instructors or teachers. And so it goes. And there are many masters that work in groups together, but these are the seven major ones. And then above these seven, there are really the first three levels of our spiritual government. And there are three individuals who take that. And they are on the first three rays. So we have the Manu, and then we have the Christ, and then we have the Maha Chohan, which simply means great Lord or Supreme Lord. And the reason that name is given is because there's no English name for that person that I know of. It's speculated that he might be the Master R, but we really don't know. I'll talk individually about them later, but for now I might just say the Manu is one who does not have a lot of students, but he does incredible work with the development of the seven races, the seven major races which will develop. We're going into the sixth now, I believe, with the advent of the New Age or the Aquarian Age. And the body will be lightened, and you're going to see children that will come in with some of the characteristics are a very oval face, a very noble-looking face or forehead instead of a very small forehead. You know, you might have a higher forehead. I'm told that their hands are going to be very classic or artistic looking, and it has to do with the kind of energy that they'll be holding. A lot of them won't be anything but strict vegetarians from the time they're very little. And if any of you have had an experience with children who have these tendencies, you probably have a child that's moving into that sixth root race. I should say just briefly a little bit about the root races. The first two, there isn't much known about. They were not in physical body like we are now, but there was some form and some connection with this planet in the end of its formation. And then the third root race came out of Lemuria, the fourth out of Atlantis. The fifth is the Aryan, of which most of us are a part, but a lot of us have tendencies towards the sixth root race. And I don't know much about the development of those, except that it probably takes hundreds of years for that to manifest. But the way things are accelerating, I think anything can happen. So the work of the Manu has to do with the will of the Creator. It's very focused, intensive. I don't know how else to say that. You can also think of his work as with governments, and you have to think of that in the highest form of that word that you can. Not government at all in the way we think of it today. It would be as the Great White Brotherhood works, or as the beings aligned with Shambhala work, complete harmony, complete understanding of what would be the appropriate way to do things, that kind of thing. And the Christ is Lord Maitreya, and this great being is the one who overshadowed Jesus and who actually melded with him during the last 3 years of his life so that he could complete his work. Jesus was the earthly Christ. He was the greatest carrier of that energy that the planet really has ever known. But it is Lord Maitreya who is the one who is coming as the embodiment of the Christ, and he is the planetary Christ. He works on the ray of love, wisdom, and as you'll hear me talk about Jesus, who's very aligned with his work, he works a lot with spirituality, esoteric groups, intuition, and the religions on the planet as they develop, where the light moves and the teachings move. It's, if you study that history at all, it's very interesting how we have Hindu and Buddhist, and you have the Christian religion, then you have the upsurgence of Muslim teachings, and all of them carrying very similar things but with a different focus. It's fascinating to look at that. Yes, sure. That is an excellent question. What can I say about that? My sense is yes. There's a lot of interesting things that are being uncovered now about beings from other systems who came to this planet and worked with Neanderthal, to a lot of gene mixing and all that kind of thing, to bring in a bigger or a better race. That's around the time of Adam, really, when all that was going on. There's complete evidence of a landing site and a whole culture that existed in the Sumerian times, Sumer. And if you want to know anything about that, read Zachariah Sitchin's work, The 12th Planet, and oh, he's an amazing scholar. So, and his work is now really getting recognition. It did not when he first published. He got kind of laughed out of his community. But it's since proved to be accurate. So he's getting, his peers are going, oh yeah, that is what that says, things like that. So yes, I would say there was such an enormous leap from Neanderthal to modern man that we don't know completely what happened there, but something did, something very big. And I'm sure that's all contained in the records. When we get that revealed to us, it will be there, it's coming. Did that help, Denise? That's a great question.
I just kind of pictured when you talked about races and it sounded like a lineage, a timeline. Then I thought,
that encompasses really thousands of years.
Yeah, when we really changed from pre-modern to modern, I wondered if that was an upping, up step from one race to the next.
Yeah. It's hard to say specifically, but I think so. Yeah, that's my supposition.